Chapter 29. The crematoriums were being readied. The men of the Sonderkommando were redoing the refractory surfaces of the furnaced entrances, painting the heavy iron doors and oiling the hinges. The dynamos and ventilators were running all day long. A specialist made sure they were functioning properly. The arrival of the Litzmannstadt ghetto had been announced. This ghetto, it should be noted, was established by the Germans in 1939. In the beginning, it had housed some 500,000 souls who worked in enormous war factories. In exchange for their work, they were paid in ghetto marks, but only in sufficient quantities to buy a meager supply of food. Needless to say, the difference between the work effort furnished and the food consumed resulted in a high mortality rate. Numerous epidemics also decimated their ranks. Thus, by the fall of 1944, only 70,000 of the original 500,000 were left. And now the fatal hour had arrived for these remaining few. They arrived at the Jewish ramp in groups of 10,000. The selection sent 95% to the left, only 5% to the right. Persecuted and tortured, physically and morally broken by 5 years of ghetto life, bowed by the knowledge of their accursed race, of their accursed race's tragic destiny, aged by forced labor, they arrived completely apathetic. Although they realized as they crossed the threshold of the crematorium that they were entering upon the last lap of their lives, there was an air of indifference about them. I descended into the undressing room. Their clothes and shoes were strewn about the floor. But then it would have been difficult to hang on coat hangers these scraps of leather and wood that passed for shoes. Nor did the cloakroom number they were assigned arouse their interest. They set their hand luggage down anywhere they happened to be. The men of the Sonderkommando, whose job it was to sort their belongings, opened a few packages and showed me their contents. A few biscuits made of cornflour, water, and a bit of linseed oil, and in some cases 3 or 4 pounds of oatmeal. That was all they had. When the convoys arrived, Dr. Mengele espied, among those lined up for selection, a hunchbacked man about 50 years old. He was not alone. Standing beside him was a tall, handsome boy of 15 or 16. The latter, however, had a deformed right foot, which had been corrected by an apparatus made of a metal plate and an orthopedic thick-soled shoe. They were father and son. Dr. Mengele thought he had discovered, in the person of the hunchback father and his lame son, a sovereign example to demonstrate his theory of the Jewish race's degeneracy. He had them fall out of ranks immediately. Taking his notebook, he inscribed something in it and entrusted the two wretches to the care of an SS trooper who took them to No. 1 crematorium. It was around noon. No. 1 was not working that day. Having nothing to do for the moment, I was in my room idling away the time. The SS soldier on duty came in and asked me to report to the gate. The father and son, accompanied by the SS guard, were already there. I took the message sent me, which read, "Dissecting room, No. 1 crematorium, that these two men be examined from a clinical point of view, that exact measurements of the two men be made, that clinical records be set up, including all interesting details and most especially those relative to the causes which provoked the bodily deformity. A second note was enclosed for Oberscharführer Musfeld. Even without reading it, I knew what it said. I entrusted it for transmission to a Sonderman.